You're listening to DG Talks, a podcast brought to you by Delta Gamma. Each month, a Delta Gamma host will speak on a different topic, covering a wide range of interests for our sisters. We look forward to engaging with you on social media about other topics you would like to hear, and we hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi there, this is Dr. Jennifer Powell Lunder. I'm a clinical psychologist specializing in work with teens, tweens, and young adults. And today we're talking about digital age parenting. I am an initiate of Epsilon Gamma at the University of Virginia, Wahoo Wah. I was born and raised in New York, where I still reside. And I've also had the pleasure of visiting collegians all over the country through the PRO program at Delta Gamma. So today we're talking about digital age parenting. But before we jump into the topic, it's important that we address an important issue related to this. We have a very unique situation occurring right now. For the first time since the Industrial Revolution, we have a group of kids being raised in a completely different culture than their parents. And what I mean by that is the digital culture. So it's very different. When you're raised in a different era, there are certainly differences in how you come up. But when you're raised in a different culture, you can be immersed in a culture, but unless you're born into it, there are nuances that you miss. For example, I believe that the kids coming up today are evolutionary wonders. I don't know about you, but my kids can work a smartphone with their thumbs quicker than lightning speed. It takes me an hour to get out a text. So let's think about digital age parenting through the lens of the fact that we have this group of kids who are born into a separate culture than their parents. So to begin with, let's talk about what's going on out there. Let's talk about keeping current. And what I mean by that is kind of what are the apps that are the most popular and what are our kids doing out there? So Snapchat is by far the app most used, that kids use most to communicate with each other. They text, but texting is reserved for parents, grandparents, and a small group of friends. So they may text if they're younger and don't have apps yet, social media apps such as Snapchat. But once they get that, that really is the main app that they use. Now, a lot of people have objections to Snapchat. Now, remember, apps become popular because users make them popular. My argument is that actually Snapchat became popular because the kids that were coming up behind the first generation of digital age kids actually heard what our concerns were. In the beginning, when the World Wide Web became popular, we had a lot of concerns about stranger danger, about our kids sharing information with unsavory characters, sharing personal information. Well, the good news is that research tells us that that is no longer a major issue, that we have taught our children well. So my argument is that Snapchat became popular because our kids heard us. They chose an app where the URLs are not forever. And because of that, Snapchat has become the main app that they use to speak with each other. So yes, I know you can do screenshots, but in general, Snapchat disappears. The app that is the most popular currently is TikTok. This was formerly known as Musical.ly. And what it was originally created for was it was an app where you would do lip syncing. So you would upload videos of yourself lip syncing. So I don't know if you've seen TikTok, but some of the videos on it are hilarious. So now it's not just reserved for lip syncing. Now it's mostly varied content, short little videos, and some of them, as I said, are really, really hilarious. The thing you want to watch with TikTok is, number one, you want to be monitoring what your kids are uploading, what videos they're uploading of themselves, as well as what are they watching, because there is a wide variety of videos on there, some more provocative than others. Instagram is very popular, obviously. A lot of us use it too to show off our beautiful children. But what goes along with Instagram is Finsta. And what Finsta stands for is fake Instagram account. So what a fake Instagram account is kids create a parody account. It's usually a joke. Usually they use a joke name. So for example, my daughter's name is Sydney and her account is called Squidney Under the Sea. So the reason that you want to be aware of this is that the good news is that they only invite a select few of their friends to be privy to this private account, whereas their Instagram, they'll be connecting with many people that they probably don't know directly. But with Finsta, it's usually a small circle of friends. And the issue is that if you've ever seen some of these accounts, you know, the kids view it as that it's just jokes between them and their friends. So sometimes it can get a little racy. Sometimes it can get downright obscene or provocative. So you just want to reinforce with your kids that whatever they're putting out there, even if they think it's private, you know, we've all heard urban legend of colleges, you know, checking social media or things popping up that were in private group chats that were unappealing about individuals. So we just want to make sure that our kids realize that they need to monitor their content always. So another site that I want to talk about is the blogging site Tumblr. And Tumblr used to be very mainstream. It's just important that if you hear that your child is spending a lot of time on Tumblr, it's important to understand that Tumblr tends to attract the more edgy kids. Sometimes it's more creative kids. They have a lot of artistic blogs, but there's also a dark side to Tumblr. And what I mean by that is that Tumblr is known to host sites called Pro Anna and Pro Mia, which actually stands for Pro Anorexia and Pro Bulimia. These are actually sites that promote eating disorders. Now, certainly that is a minority of blogs and content on Tumblr, but it's just important to be aware that if your child is spending a lot of time on there, that it's really a site that's more, as I said, edgy than the mainstream sites. Finally, what I want to talk about is Discord. So Discord is used by gamers. And the reason I mention this is that I've had many times parents tell me, oh, my kid's not on social media. They don't have Snapchat. Well, gamers prefer Discord. Discord was originally created for gamers to be able to talk to each other while playing. And now most gamers use it all the time. They use it as a replacement to an app like Snapchat. So they may be talking to each other at times when they're not gaming. So there's nothing wrong with that. It's just important to realize that you may think that your child is not using social media when they actually are. So let's look at the research. So the first thing that we want to talk about is the fact that our kids are living their lives in real time. And this has created a real issue with FOMO, fear of missing out. Because life is played out in real time, no matter where they are, they always have access to what else is going on. And what we know from the research is that actually FOMO is associated with increased rates of depression and anxiety. So when your child, let's say, is at a family function, and they're complaining that they're missing out on stuff with their friends, that's because they have direct access to what's being posted. So it's just important to be aware of that. Another very interesting study found that taking away a smartphone is equivalent to losing a limb, okay, for your kids. So that's right. Taking away the smartphone or technology is like cutting off their arm. Now remember, we know a world without this technology. Our kids do not. So when they lose their cell phones or they don't have access to Wi-Fi or their computers, they feel like they've been completely isolated and cut off. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't, you know, on occasion use this as a consequence. I just think that it's important that as parents, we're aware that the impact is very devastating and real, that they really don't know life without that communication. So when it happens, they really feel cut off from the world. So the good news is that research tells us that parental monitoring is very effective in helping manage our kids' behavior. in digital media. And actually, what's interesting is one study found that perceived monitoring is very effective, which in English means that actually you don't actually have to really monitor. You just have to act like you're monitoring. And that's important to know, because what that tells us is that kids want boundaries. They need limits. And it's our job to provide that for our kids. Okay? So just remember that. You know, sometimes I have parents who will tell me that they monitor their kids' content, but their kids do not know this. That is never a good situation. You want to be upfront with your kids about this. And the reason is simple. If you see something that's concerning and you address it with your kid and they don't know that you're monitoring, they're going to focus the whole conversation on an invasion of privacy. Whereas if you tell them upfront, we don't have that problem. Okay, let's talk about the communication crunch. What do I mean by that? I mean the fact that many kids now are addicted to technology. Like I said, remember, not being on that phone is like, if they lose it, it's like cutting off a limb, right? And they feel compelled to respond all the time. They have no process. They have no time to process before they're responding, right? And also paranoia is related to always feeling on, which you're not wrong about, because really in today's world, aren't we always on? They have to contend with the social media shuffle, which is that it's very important to ensure relevance out there. Likes are a commodity. You have to give likes on time. You have to comment on time and appropriately. These are all the issues that our kids deal with when they're out in the social media world. There's also the power of pictures, constant attention to appearance, daily documentation of life. I don't know about you, but when I go to a restaurant and my meal comes, I want to eat. I don't want to wait 10 minutes so that my dinner companion can get the perfect picture, right? Selfie mania has taken over. We all have seen our kids spend hours trying to get the perfect pose. And obviously concern over comments, poring over comments once pictures and content are posted. This has become tied to self-esteem. So these are things that we really need to be aware of. We also have to be aware of the potential pitfalls of anytime media viewing, aka streaming, right? So for example, I know that my kids will often use Netflix as a study break. So they'll tell me, okay, I'm going to do this assignment and then I'm going to take a study break and watch Netflix. Now, one episode of The Office can turn into two and three and four. And before you know it, they've gone down the rabbit hole. I don't know about you, but I watched Downton Abbey in 2 days straight. My husband thought I was crazy. So, and I'm not a very impulsive person. So if we can go down that rabbit hole, our vulnerable adolescents can definitely go down the rabbit hole. So how do we manage that? We want to monitor the content. A good way to bond with your kids is to actually sit down with them and say, hey, let's watch a series together. What are you watching? You want to be aware of what they're watching also, because anytime streaming means that they could be exposed to all sorts of content, some of which you may not find appropriate. So it's just important to be connected and aware of what they're doing. We also have to contend with a gender divide. And what I mean by that is, from a developmental perspective, females and males negotiate the world very differently. And this is based on research. So females negotiate the world via intimate relationships. So their relationships with people are very important. Males, on the other hand, negotiate the world based on competition, or originally back in caveman times, it was physical prowess. Whoever was the strongest was the top dog. But the internet and the distance that social media provides us with has added another layer, an opportunity to be top dog without being seen. And as a result, we have a phenomenon that I call the Clark Kent syndrome. So this is the idea that a mild-mannered young man can be a top dog in the world of social media. And the reason this is important is, again, remember, as I said earlier, females negotiate the world via intimate relationships. So what this puts males and females on uneven ground, with guys trying to be top dog. So what we have seen, unfortunately, is a rise in inappropriate requests in social media. It's not that uncommon for males to ask a female for provocative pictures, even nudes. And unfortunately, because girls want to, you know, focus on relationships, they will often respond inappropriately to those requests by sending pictures, not really thinking about it. Or thinking about it, but feeling pressured, because they're darned if they do, they're darned if they don't. If they send them, they'll often be what we call slut-shamed. If they don't send them, they're still shamed. And I know you're sitting there thinking, my son would never, ever put that request forward. But the problem is that this has become such commonplace that any kid can do this. It's just become a common phenomenon. And what I mean by that is that it's not about good or bad kids. There are no bad kids. There are just bad choices. And when something becomes so commonplace that everybody's asking, it makes our boys especially feel powerful and like it's no big deal to ask for this. No harm done. That it's okay. So how do we deal with the gender dilemma? By acknowledging that the issue exists, right? And talking to our girls, talking to our boys. This is why Me Too really matters. Because Me Too flipped the script on institutional prejudice, right? Institutional practices of sexism and institutional practices of sexual harassment. So we now have a great opportunity to point this out to our kids and really talk to them, to our boys, to explain to them that it's not okay to make these requests. And obviously to our girls, explaining to them that they shouldn't be responding to these requests, that they can fight from the front lines and step up and say, no, I'm not going to do this. And that's the way it is. So I kind of want to switch gears now and talk about an interesting situation that goes on with Snapchat streaks. Now, this is really targeted more at the parents of tweens, because by the time kids become teenagers, they're less focused on Snapchat streaks. So first of all, let me explain what a streak is. A streak takes place with Snapchat when you send a snap to somebody and they respond back. A flame with a number in it shows up on the screen. The first time that that happens, a one shows up. So the important thing to realize about Snapchat streaks are that there are two commodities. One is how many streaks, in other words, how many people you're engaging in this activity with. And the second is how long each streak is. Now, that number only changes by day. So if you snap back and forth with the same person 10 times a day, the number will not go to 10. It will only change as long as the days are. So day one is one, day two is two. So here's the thing. Oftentimes, when parents either limit the use of cell phones for their kids or maybe take it away as a consequence, I've had parents come to me and tell me that their kids have become really upset, extraordinarily upset, and they can't figure out why. And they're talking about Snapchat, that they have to be on Snapchat. And it's really confusing to parents. So this is because you have to understand that while this may sound ridiculous to you, these Snapchat streaks are a work of art to your kids. They worked really hard to have many of them and to keep up with them. So I want to offer some suggestions on how you manage this. I am not saying that you should not take away the phone or have them put it away at certain times. You certainly, as a parent, have that authority, and we certainly want to encourage limiting use. But I just want you to be aware that if your kid tells you that they need to have their Snapchat streaks covered, this is what they're talking about. So there are different ways that you can manage this. One is that they can have someone else cover for them which means they have somebody else do their Snapchat streaks for them. But if they do that, then they're going to have to give a password to their account. So if you're going to allow your kid time to make those arrangements, you should always make sure that they're offering a temporary password that gets switched as soon as they get their phones back. And I will tell you a little story about a situation where the password became an important factor. So I knew a kid who went on vacation and had a friend cover for him. While he was on vacation, the friend was doing his Snapchat streaks, keeping them up for him. So when this kid came back from vacation, he went to school and he gets to school and there is a girl standing at his locker. Now he knows her from class and he says hello to her and she seems very eager to see him. So then after each class during the day, this young lady shows up and starts talking to him and he really can't figure out what's going on. Long story short, subsequently he finds out that this girl is apparently his girlfriend. What happened was when his friend was sending out his Snapchat streaks, he asked her out on his behalf. So we just have to be really careful. We also want to make sure that those passwords get changed because while in this case, the kid gave permission for the password while he was away, we would not want somebody later on getting sneaking back into our accounts and putting out Snapchats that are not really from us. And there have been some concerning situations where kids, as jokes, will send out a really inappropriate Snapchat. And I can tell you that that causes all sorts of havoc because they have somebody else's password. So they're posing as someone else. So we just want to make our kids aware of that. So what about the impact of the internet? It's important to talk to our kids about the fact that fake news is real, that it exists, and that it's important to be aware that you can't believe everything you read on the internet, right? We also have an issue of overexposure to information. And kids will see disturbing content over and over again. And unfortunately, this free access can result in raising their threshold for shock. The prime example I can give you is that school shootings have become so common that we don't react as strongly to them as we used to. Certainly, it's concerning, but our threshold or tolerance of them, the bar has been raised so high that we don't even bat an eyelash these days when we hear about one, which is devastating. So we really have to teach our kids empathy. They have empathy, but we really need to talk with them about the fact that they are overexposed and that this can result in really feelings of being innocuous, not really affected by content that's disturbing because they're exposed to it so often, right? The other thing that I think is really important is awareness of other opinions. And I think that it's a great thing that the internet provides us this opportunity and digital media provides us this opportunity. I, for example, make it a point to keep people in my feed, friends of mine who may have different political views than I have, because I think it's really important to know what other people are thinking. Because if you don't have people with varied opinions in your feeds. I know sometimes, especially when it comes to politics, people will block people because they don't like what they're saying. But I think it's important to hear what other people are saying, because if you only have people in your feed who think like you, then you have a false sense of what's really going out on in the world. And I think that it's important for our kids to realize that. So another common topic that comes up when we talk about social media is cyberbullying. And cyberbullying is a terrible phenomenon, obviously. But what I want to talk about is actually how our kids can become what I call accidental cyberbullies. So when I speak with school kids, often I will ask them, how many of you have ever cyberbullied somebody? And I will ask a large group, not a single hand will go up. But then if I say to the group, how many of you have posted a sarcastic comment on your friend's site? Many hands will go up. So this is interesting. The definition of bullying, it means with malicious intent. And that's obvious. We know when bullying is happening. But the difference is the definition of cyberbullying takes into account the perspective of the person receiving the bullying. So it's from their perspective. So what they view as bullying. So this really changes things because oftentimes kids will have banter back and forth. And while your child may think that something is funny or have a different tolerance for, you know, comments or criticisms, they can't be sure that the people they're engaging with aren't more sensitive. And this creates accidental cyberbullies. So it's just really important to talk to your kids about the fact that they have to be really mindful of what they're sending back and forth to their friends, and that their friends may not always be upfront and honest about what hurts their feelings and what makes them feel like they're being bullied. So this is important to understand. Technology is also a tool, and we want to teach social media savvy. We have an amazing opportunity for our kids to make meaningful connections. So before digital media and the world of digital media, you could, if you research somebody, for example, you or were interested in a celebrity or an athlete or somebody in a potential career field that you admired their work, you could write a letter to them, but 9 chances out of 10, you really weren't going to hear back from them. But now we have the ability to really make meaningful direct connections, to be mentored, to reach out to people that we admire and hear back from them and really build up connections. So making meaningful connections is a wonderful thing that we have the opportunity to take advantage of, and our kids have the opportunity to take advantage of. The next thing that we definitely want to focus on, and I talked about this a little bit earlier, is yes, they may be watching. So let's control what they see. So as I said earlier, there's urban legend that admissions officers from colleges check out social media sites of kids, you know, their accounts. Who knows if this is true or not, but the fact is, why not use that opportunity to put your best foot forward? But the thing I caution is that most people are good at monitoring their own content, and this goes for adults as well, but we forget about the content that may be out there from other people. So like when you're tagged in something. So it's never a bad idea to Google your name and see what pops up, and Google your kid's name and see what pops up. And really make sure that you're aware of what content you're being tagged in. Because sometimes something that your friend may think is hilarious, an unsavory picture of you, is not something that you want out there, right? So that's just some tips for you. The final thing I want to say about this is that our kids have this awesome opportunity to be the change that they seek. Because communication now is so immediate, they can actually reach out and evoke change. They can get involved in causes more easily than we could before digital media. So I think this is a fabulous opportunity to really get more involved in the world. So adolescents are egocentric by nature. And when they become tweens and teens, that's when their ability for abstract thinking increases, when they start to stop thinking about their immediate world and the world around them. So when their minds start opening up, that's when they have the opportunity to really think about things in the world at large. And they have an opportunity to get involved in ways that we never could before digital media. Technology is very helpful for safety, and I believe strongly in using safety apps, and especially using GPS. I know kids don't love when parents want to put GPS apps on their phones, but I think it's very important, especially when kids go off to college. I tell all the college kids I work with that they need to make sure that their friends at school have their locations, because if they get lost at a party or an event, they can be found quite easily. And when kids argue that they don't want their parents GPSing them, what I tell them is, and what I tell parents, is that this is for safety. So parents shouldn't use this as a tool to catch their kids not being where they're supposed to be, but more as a way to really make sure that their kids are safe. I also definitely love the fact that now we can have amazing parent networks through Facebook. We have parent pages. There are neighborhood websites where we can share information as parents. So I tell all the people I know that if you know something about my kids, even if it's not something that is good news about something that they were involved in or engaged in, I want to know. And the reason I put that out there is that when we get information about other people's kids, sometimes we're reticent to share it because you never know how a parent's going to react. But through these parent networks, we can really share information about what our kids are up to in a quick way. And it really promotes safety. So there are many discussions and dilemmas we need to consider when thinking about our kids as citizens out in the digital world. You want to talk with them about how you plan to monitor them. As I said earlier, are you going to ask for passwords to sites? Are there time limits on use? How will you enforce this? Do they have to hand their technology in, for example, before they go to sleep? These are all questions that are really important. And again, you want to be upfront about this. You can't monitor and then when you see something concerning and your kids don't know that you're monitoring, then approach it, because then you're going to have to deal with the privacy conversation. So what I always say is that what you're monitoring for is safety and safety only. So if you happen to read through social media or through a text that Mary and Bob broke up, don't talk to your kids about this, because that's not a safety issue, okay? Just focus on speaking to them when safety issues come up. So another dilemma or discussion you may want to have is it ever okay for kids to meet up with friends that they meet via social media? What about dating? What are your rules and criteria? And that's really up to you. But nowadays, it is far more common to kids with common interests to connect this way. So when this first happened, as I said earlier, we would worry about stranger danger. But now, because it's so common, it's something you need to consider. And that's certainly up to you as a parent to decide. And if not, how can you ensure that your kids won't find a way to connect? So finally, I want to leave you with some resources. So the first, I talked about GPS. Find Me through the Apple products is a great way to GPS your kids. Life 360 is another GPS app. I love this one because if your kids are driving, it can actually tell you what speed they're traveling at. And another one I love is Circle of Six. So Circle of Six is an app where the user downloads the app and picks six people to be in their circle of six. And what happens is that if they're in a concerning situation, like let's say a college kid is on a date, and the date is not going the way they want it to, by simply tapping an icon quickly on their phone, it sends a message to their circle of six for them to call them. So then they can use that as an excuse, like, oh, I just got this call, I have to go. Now, with Circle of Six, only the user has to have the app. The circle of six do not. They just get the message. And there are other messages that get sent given on the situation. So it's just a really great app. And finally, I want to share with you an amazing website that gives lots of information for parents and teachers and kids on keeping up with digital media. And that is commonsensemedia.org, all one word. So I want to leave you by offering you a way to connect with me. Again, this is Dr. Jennifer Powell Lunder. You can reach me through my email, which is docjpl1@gmail.com. And again, that's docjpl1@gmail.com. Thank you, and I hope this was helpful.
Thank you for listening to this episode of DG Talks. Be sure to connect with us on Facebook at Delta Gamma.